One of the most remarkable aspects of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is its unique history. Throughout the world, great stories from faithful church members have only added to that history. This program shares some of these incredible stories of faith, perseverance, hope, and inspiration. You're listening to Legacy. I'm your host, Nathan Wright. Today on Legacy, we're talking with Randy Dixon, who has been on a previous episode when we talked about the Great Tabernacle here in Salt Lake City. Today we brought Randy back to talk about the early Salt Lake Valley and some of the structures that have survived and those that haven't survived. It's just a very interesting time. And first off, Randy, why don't you give us an overview of your background and what you like to do?
I've worked for the church for the church history department since 1975, and while there, I've been able to work with a lot of material relating to Salt Lake City. For many years, I cataloged photographs, including many of the city, and in doing that, I've learned a lot about the beginnings of the city and the buildings erected. And I've always kind of looked out for information down that line because I've been interested in architecture.
Tell us what brought you to the historical department, what educational background and so forth.
Since a young boy, I was interested in history. And so I attended Ricks College and BYU, got a degree in history. And shortly after that, I was able to get a job at the Church Historical Department, as it was called then, which just was, for me, was just everything I ever wanted because of my interest in church history. And so it's been great to be able to work there for all these years and in an area that I've really enjoyed. And so it's been a great experience.
What are some of the specific tasks you've done for the department, and what brought you this great interest in the Salt Lake Valley?
You know, in looking back, I remember my father served a mission in the 30s in Texas, and he brought home a picture book of Salt Lake City that was used, I think, as a kind of a missionary. It was a picture book of the church history with a lot of pictures of Salt Lake City. So I remember using that when I was growing up and interested in the buildings pictured, Salt Lake Theater and the Social Hall and the Temple and Tabernacle. And so I grew up kind of being fascinated with that. And since I lived in Idaho, it wasn't until I was much older that I actually came to Salt Lake. So it was this interest. It was this book that really got me interested in these things. So when it came to Salt Lake, I kind of continued that and built on it over the years.
And so what are some of the things that you've done for the historical department?
When I first started working there, I was a cataloger, and I cataloged a lot of records of the church, say records of wards and stakes, and then for many years I worked cataloging photographs, and that was particularly interesting. You know, they say that a picture is worth 1,000 words. You can learn so much looking at a photograph, and so for many years that was my task, and I delighted in that. Over the years, I've also worked in the public service, helping patrons that came in doing research, did that for many years. And my background in photographs helped in that also. And most recently, I've been working with the church's media team for our department, trying to come up with ways of sharing our collection more broadly via the web and other new technologies. So that's my current assignment.
Very good. So let's jump into this. What did Brigham Young and the original pioneers see when they first saw the valley? There are some accounts of chest-high grass and maybe some trees along the streams. I don't know. What did they really see when they first got here?
Well, it's when I grew up, with the story of this Salt Lake Valley being this barren desert. And but in study and researching primary materials, diaries, it becomes clear that the valley was barren. The saints were used to the east, where there were many more trees and much more foliage than what we have out here. So it was, in a way, barren for them.
Compared to what they were used to.
But when they first came in, they camped on the when they first camped on this city site in July 23rd, Brigham Young had stayed back because he had been ill. They found a valley that had some trees along the creeks, but they mentioned having to scythe down the grass in order to prepare for farming, for plowing. And they mention about some of their cattle. They thought that they were lost, but they found they were just hidden by the grass. So the valley had some very fertile parts, and sometimes they had to avoid the marshy areas because of they couldn't travel through that. So it was quite a bit different than the story that I grew up with. But again, they were used to a very different area in the eastern states, and those that came from Europe too. This was much different, but we shouldn't think of it as being a sagebrush flat. Although of course there was sagebrush in the area, but not necessarily right in the along the creeks in the valley.
We've all heard that they immediately started plowing and planting crops, etc. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But how soon did they actually start laying out the city of Salt Lake City that we know today?
Well, the first day they arrived on the 23rd of July, they started plowing and preparing for crops, and they started preparing to irrigate also. And so the first days and weeks were involved in doing that. But Brigham Young very soon chose a spot for the temple and a spot to survey the city from, the corner of the temple block. And so within a week or so, they began surveying the city in 10-acre blocks with the wide streets. And so they knew that they needed to accomplish a lot in that next few weeks, and so they were very busy preparing what they could do that fall, because Brigham Young and many of the group went back to winter quarters. And so they surveyed, and they started preparing a place to stay for those who were staying to stay the winter, and they prepared a area to build a fort on the area that's now Pioneer Park. So they moved very quickly and moved ahead to accomplish what they needed to do.
So that may come as a surprise that the first structure built was a fort. Is that correct? Or
probably the very first structure was a bowery that was built by members of the Mormon Battalion, which was basically a shade posts with branches over the top, so they could meet Of course, this was July, so we know how hot it is in July in Salt Lake. And so that was probably – that was the first building, but that was, of course, a temporary building. And it was built on what's now the Temple Square. But they soon began building the fort, which entailed building – making adobe bricks. The fort was made up of three walls of adobe, and one wall was made up of log cabins that made the fourth side of the fort. And leaning against this wall, they built adobe cabins along the three sides of the fort.
We're all familiar with the tabernacle, and it got completed in 1867, as I recall. What are some of the other larger structures they started on relatively soon?
Well, the first building that they – of a public nature that they – and a more of a permanent nature that they started on was the council house. In fact, they chose the site in 47, you know, but they didn't start on the actual building until 48. And this building was located just south of Temple Square at the corner of what's now South Temple and Main Street. This building was made of sandstone and adobe and was built as a, as the name indicates, a council house. So it was a place where they would hold meetings. They had offices. They... The state legislature, the territorial legislature met there. City hall had meetings. The city council had meetings there. It was kind of a multi-purpose building. And as time went on, different functions that were held in there went out to other – and other buildings housed those functions, such as the city hall was built and Endowment House was built for temple – ordinances that were originally performed in the council house. But it was really the focus of Salt Lake's earliest history was in that building.
So the city begins to grow. What was life like really in the Salt Lake Valley in those early years for just a regular person who lived here?
Well, for someone first coming in, the first thing they would need to do is acquire some property. For those coming in the earliest years, the property was distributed as people needed it.
Did they have to purchase it, or was it just here's
initially
a spot for
there
you?
Was a fee, a kind of a filing fee, but the lots were actually free, and they would pay the county recorder so much to file. But very soon the lots were all distributed, and so those coming in and wanting to stay in Salt Lake would have to purchase property. Very soon the property started turning over. People would charge for the property. Lots were divided up. If a person wanted land to farm, then there was a section called the Big Field that was south of Knight South that was a farming – designated as a farming area. So often a family would have a lot in the city and also a farming lot south of town, and they would travel there back and forth to farm their property. And then they would – likely they would build a house on their city lot as they had means. At first, those who came early and had houses in the fort, if it was a log house, they would often take that log house, disassemble it, and move it onto their lot and use that until they were able to build a more permanent dwelling. And then as time went on, they would, depending on how they did financially, then they would build a larger home, maybe out of adobe or later out of brick. And so you can – and then often these old log houses were put in the backyard as a shed for other uses. the log house that we all know about that's on display here in Salt Lake next to the Church Museum was one of those log houses from the fort that was moved to a lot north of Temple Square and eventually became kind of a potting shed in the backyard of the property. And then it was acquired by the church and became a museum exhibit.
And just as a reminder for our listeners, that structure sits between the Family History Library and the Church Museum, and anybody can visit it. It's quite unique, quite quaint. Are there any other original type structures? I don't know if what you consider original, maybe the first 10 years of the people being here, that exist still.
There are very few. The council house that I described burned down in 1883 in one of the largest fires up to that date in Salt Lake City, completely destroyed. The other buildings that survived from that early period, of course, the Beehive House, where Brigham Young lived, the Lion House, where his families were located. There are a couple of other log homes that still exist in the city that date from that early period. Scattered around the city, there are other adobe houses. Often they have been added on to, or they're, you wouldn't recognize them as pioneer homes because of all the remodeling. But so scattered around, there are quite a few adobe houses. Oh. Of course, every year there are fewer as the city grows and there's redevelopment.
So from the history of Nauvoo, we hear about how people pass their time with dances and entertainment and whatever else. Did that follow on into Salt Lake City with them? What type of things did people do for fun in Salt Lake Valley in those early years? Any idea?
Well, early on, they looked for ways to entertain themselves, as they had it in Nauvoo. And one of the first structures on Temple Square was the Bowery that was built. This is different from the one I mentioned earlier. There was one in 1849 that was built, and it very soon became used as a theater. Besides having Sunday meetings there and other meetings during the week, it was also used as a theater. And very soon the social hall was built on State Street, which was used both for plays but mostly for dances and parties. And you can imagine in those days when without the kind of entertainment we have today, they would be looking for ways to break the monotony of labor, and they would look for ways to entertain themselves. And so, you know, the earliest social hall was one of the very earliest buildings built. Even before that, there was a bathhouse built at the Warm Spring north of town, and it was used for parties and dances. And so from very early on, people were seeking to entertain themselves.
During these early years, the wars that the United States were involved with, Spanish American and the Civil War, etc., how did that affect people back here in Utah? Would it have affected their lives in a major way, or?
Well, the earliest war, let's say the Civil War, even though we were so far away from the United States then, we were impacted in Utah because the army of soldiers were sent here, and they set up Camp Douglas, later Fort Douglas, on the East Bench to kind of monitor the Mormons. And the fact that there were soldiers in Salt Lake, or earlier we'd had Johnson's army that came out, which made a big change for Salt Lake because it was then that they started having a police force in Salt Lake, and it had other impacts having these outsiders here that we had to deal with. As time went on, mentioned the Spanish-American War. By then, Salt Lake was pretty developed and integrated into America as a whole. And the impact was probably similar to what it was in other parts of the country, where certain people joined the army and served in those wars. When the war was over, there was a big celebration in Salt Lake, a big parade down Main Street, and they had decorations, and they had a triumphal arch that was built over the street, and so, like most Americans, it was the victory was celebrated, but the impact probably on the church was not as much as in earlier pioneer times.
Did the impact of the railroad come near this same time, or was it a little bit after?
The railroad came to Utah in 69.
Oh, okay.
And it did have a lot of impact, because prior to that, immigrants coming to Utah from Europe and elsewhere would have to come by ox team. And so with the fact that they could get on a train and come all the way to Utah, and soon the railroad that came to Ogden was Salt Lake was connected to Ogden by a railroad soon after, and they could make their trip from the east in just a few days. So the people could travel much more easily, but more than that, it was easy to get building materials and furniture and all sorts of things could easily be delivered to Utah, where before it would have taken a great effort hauling all the material across on wagons. And so there was a big impact. One impact, of course, would be on architecture. Before the railroad, the buildings were mainly built of adobe and stone and wood. But after the railroad, then they could bring in all sorts of materials. And one material was cast iron that was used for a building material for facades of stores and buildings. And immediately there was an obvious change in the Salt Lake City. For example, the Zions Cooperative Mercantile Institution, ZCMI, build a new store built of cast iron that could easily be assembled. And whereas before they would have to laboriously build out of stone, so it was kind of a prefabricated building. And that was one of many buildings in Salt Lake that were built out of this cast iron that was shipped in from St. Louis or from other places. And so the buildings got higher, they went up faster. Goods came in that they didn't have before. And as a result, of course, there was some fear that this would change the society here. And so the result was the organization of I mentioned ZCMI as a cooperative movement to try to maintain the economics here, mm-hmm. so we wouldn't be overwhelmed by what the railroad brought.
So local leaders knew that the railroad was coming and that there were most likely some big changes. Did they make any physical preparation, like extra housing or more hotels?
Well, Salt Lake, I think, developed more on a free market basis. Entrepreneurs knew that things were going to change, and there were new hotels built, and there were new stores, and the church itself, as I understand, was not really involved in it that much, except through the cooperative businesses that. But at the same time, there were many other businesses that were not church related, that were individually owned. Businessmen from all over came to Utah, and we had the development of mining, and so quite soon Utah had, it was only for just a few years, was Utah really isolated, and merchants came within a couple of years and set up stores, and so if we think of early Salt Lake as being just a very isolated society, it was for a short time, but very soon national influences were very prominent.
So that short time would have only been like 15 or 20 years.
Right, okay. Right.
What needed to change in Utah for it to become a state to be accepted into the Union?
The biggest obstacle was polygamy, because the state had grown economically in the number of people. Areas that were much less developed than Utah had become states. And so it was the fact of polygamy that kept us out of the Union for so long.
And so once that took place, did it change life in Utah much, becoming a state?
Becoming a state, you know, if you look at just the way society was, I don't see that there was that much different. The 90s was a time of a lot of growth, economic growth, but also a time of depression. They had the economic collapse then. So I think the main difference was just that instead of having a governor that was appointed, we could elect our own officials.
Sure.
And so that was probably the main change. And that, of course, brought up a lot of political questions about who should have influence, who should be elected, what groups should have power, and by that time there were a lot of non-Mormons in Utah, and they had a political party, and so it's a very complex complex time.
Good, and thank you for taking a shot at that for me. With the influx of people, which brought non-Mormons to the area, how soon did other churches start going up? Was it within that 20-year period or so?
Right. Even before the railroad came, of course, there were a lot of merchants who came to Utah. Were non-Mormons, and they were here from almost the beginning, and they certainly served an important purpose to bring goods to Utah and to provide those goods and provide employment, and so quite early on there were religious groups too. For a while, there was a building built by the Congregational Church called Independence Hall, and it was built in the 1860s, so this is before the railroad. And it was used by many different religious groups to meet in. And I'm sure that it was named that as a way of showing that they were separate from the Mormons. But even while Brigham Young was still alive, several important churches were built in Salt Lake. The St. Mary's Church was built by the Catholic Church. In fact, it was built just a block and a half away from the Beehive House. The Episcopal Church built St. Mark's Cathedral in the 1870s. The Methodist Episcopal Church built a large building on Third South. And so these were buildings that that were prominent in the community and that were handsome structures, stone structures, and it showed how large the non-Mormon population was, that they had the resources to build these buildings.
Some of the ones that you've mentioned and others that have long histories are just beautiful and have a very important part in the history of Salt Lake City. Let's talk about some of your very favorite structures. You say you love architecture. What are some of your favorite buildings here in Salt Lake? Standing and not standing. Let's say that.
I think the most unique, most interesting building, of course, is the tabernacle, because it's so unusual. And it was built at a time when it was, see, this was before the railroad came, and it was a very innovative, and I think it kind of showed how you can take what you have and build something unique, even though you don't have great resources, using the structure that was designed for bridges to roof the building, and using metal that had been used for bolts in other buildings, or horseshoes and other things that they used to tie the roof together. Just a really unique building, and I would say that's probably my favorite building. Over the years, there's been many of the early buildings no longer exist. There were many stores on Main Street that were built in the popular styles of the time, Greek Revival, buildings in Italianate style, stone buildings. The church built ward houses around the city, and in those days they were mostly used for schoolhouses. But many of them are very handsome buildings that wouldn't necessarily look like what we think of a meeting house today. The Salt Lake Temple, of course, is another amazing building built out of granite that shows the great permanence and showing the foresight of Brigham Young and building such a large, complicated building, starting it when the resources were almost nil. And, of course, that explains why the building took so long to erect. But there, over the generations, there have been many other really amazing buildings that haven't survived, such as the buildings of the LDS University that used to stand on the block where the church office building is. Beautiful buildings built by designed by Brigham Young's son. The Bishop's Building, a really detailed and wonderful building. Many of these were cleared to build the buildings that we have today on the block east of the temple.
Which is how it happens.
As the city grows, I'm one that loves to preserve old buildings. But I realize that times change, and it's one thing for a small city to preserve its buildings, but as a city grows, the needs change. Yesterday I was given a tour for some of our department employees, and we walked around the outside of Temple Square, and I talked about the buildings that used to be around Temple Square, and I had to take pictures to show because most of the buildings are gone. And some of them could have been preserved because they were of such high quality and built so well. Others were kind of buildings that were kind of minor, or they were built in more of a temporary way. But it's amazing what is no longer there, and people are kind of amazed at what used to be around Temple Square.
I seem to recall as a child going into a museum on the south side, southeast side of Temple Square. Was that one raised for the South Visitor Center, or when did that actually take place?
It was. It was the Bureau of Information was on the south side of Temple Square. It was started in 1904, I believe, the first part of it. And then it was enlarged over the years, and eventually a museum was built on the east end of it. And then also near it was displayed the log cabin, the dual log cabin that we talked about earlier. And that was displayed just outside the museum. And so that was all raised in the mid-70s for the new visitor center that's there. And then the new museum was built west of Temple Square where the log cabin is and a lot of the artifacts from the old museum.
One of my favorite structures on Temple Square is the Assembly Hall. Can you give us a kind of a background on why that building was built?
The Assembly Hall was built on the site of the old tabernacle, which had been built by Brigham Young, opened in 1852, and was the major assembly place in Salt Lake until the new tabernacle was built. But it had been built as a more of a temporary building, anticipating that a larger tabernacle would be built. So after the new tabernacle was built, in fact, one of the last things that Brigham Young did before his death was to plan the assembly hall, which in the earliest stages was called the new tabernacle. So it's kind of confusing if you're not familiar with all the terminology.
We talked about that last time. There's several different tabernacles to
And so he had the old tabernacle demolished with plans for the new building to be built. And it was originally built. The tabernacle itself was not heated in the winter because of its size. And so during the winter, they would hold meetings in smaller buildings, and so the assembly hall was built as a place to house these meetings during cold weather because it was heated. And it was originally built as the tabernacle for the Salt Lake Stake, which covered the entire Salt Lake Valley in those days, and is still used that way today for the Salt Lake Stake and other downtown stakes. But it was a completely different style, of course, than what other buildings had been, and it represented what was popular in the late 1870s. It was, and is a much more religious-looking building, I guess you could say, than the old tabernacle and these other early pioneer buildings.
One of the interesting features on the Assembly Hall is the one of the spires on the north side that has a flat top that, as I read the information, said used to be a chimney for this heat that you were talking about.
Right, so. Right. There's one on either side of the building that used to be chimneys. And so the building was heated because it was more compact. And
just a question here that I've wondered over the years. How many times has Salt Lake City had a trolley system? Because we have one now. It's called the Tracks, and it goes from downtown Salt Lake to about 100 South. And there have been trolleys in the past as well, as I understand it.
Right. When Brigham Young was still president of the church, And I bring him up because that's a way of kind of designating a certain time period.
Good, thank you.
The city had a trolley system, and it was mule cars, or the cars were hauled by mules at first, and they went from, different designated streets. One line went to the Warm Springs north of town, and the mules were initially housed in one of Brigham Young's barns. Over time, the mule cars were replaced by streetcars that were electric. Cars in the 1880s, and then over the years that was expanded. We had a lot of streetcar suburbs in Salt Lake that, to the south and the other directions, that depended on the streetcars, and that's why the city grew, because people could ride the streetcars, and those continued clear up into the, as I understand, clear up into the 1940s.
So where does Trolley Square, the building that's 7th East and about 4th South, fall into here?
And, well, Trolley Square originally was housed the streetcar system. It was built around 1910 or so to house the street railway system, and was used for that until the 1940s or 50s. By then, the automobile had become so dominant that the streetcars were discontinued, and at the same time, there was also the Bamberger Railroad, which they called the interurban, so it ran between cities, and went north and south, I believe. I'm not too sure about exactly the extent of the Bamberger Railroad. But today, the Bamberger Railroad has basically been recreated with the Front Runner train system. And the light rail system, the track system, is also kind of an interurban system. But Salt Lake City is also planning to add another streetcar system to the city that will run. The first one is planned in Sugar House, but they're also planning to have streetcars that will supplement tracks or the light rail around a kind of a loop around downtown and in close areas. So we're basically going back to a system that we had decades ago, and it just shows how things just kind of go in kind of an eternal round.
So Salt Lake is in the middle of a huge downtown development at this point. Do you see any impact on the history of Salt Lake City based on this development?
Well, one aspect of it I think is quite interesting is the new malls are going to be called the City Creek Center. And originally the city was put here where it is because it was along City Creek, because it had a lot of water, and it was a good site for a city. And over the years, City Creek was, while its water was appreciated, the creek itself was buried in a pipe under North Temple Street, and most people had no idea that it even existed until 1983, when, because of the high runoff, the creek made itself known again by flooding, and
the State Street River.
And the water had to be diverted down State Street, really brought back to people's consciousness the fact that the creek existed. Since then, the city has, in different ways, has used the creek. There's a water feature that runs now down North Temple Street in front of the Church History Museum, in front of the Conference Center, and the city would like to extend that to the Jordan River through other parts of the city. The City Creek Park has been extended down from Memory Grove and opened up the creek. And so I think because of this high profile, people appreciate the creek more. And so the fact that the mall is being named after City Creek kind of bring us back to our roots of being founded on this creek. And through the mall, there will be representations of the creek there too, with a water features throughout the structure that would be at least representative of what the creek would be like if it were really a creek.
Very good. Thank you. This has sure been a fun discussion today. Is there anything else you would want to share with our listeners about the history of Salt Lake or its architecture?
One thing about Salt Lake, I think from the beginning, Salt Lake has, even though it's a Mormon, found as a Mormon community, we've always had close ties to the rest of the country. And the style of our buildings reflect the styles of the buildings in the rest of the country. And there's not really a unique Mormon architecture. The council house looked like Midwest courthouses. Salt Lake Temple, in various aspects, represent the Gothic style that's popular all across the United States and Europe. The only really unique building seems to be the tabernacle. And our stores and another hotels and things represented what was popular around the country. So that, to me, that shows a connection with and continuity with the rest of the United States and, in some ways, Europe. And that's continued to the present. I was recently in Denver, and I just realized how, in some ways, we have similarities with Denver and with other cities on a much smaller scale, of course. But one thing that makes us really unique is the setting at the foot of Ensign Peak and surrounded by mountains and our creeks. It's just a wonderful setting for a city.
Good. Thank you. We've been talking with Randy Dixon today, a Church History Department employee of 35 years and a great admirer of Salt Lake and its history. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.